Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Private investigator Elvis Cole and his enigmatic partner Joe Pike race to find a terrifying unidentified killer in The Big Empty, the 20th Elvis Cole novel. Author Robert Crace delivers Cole and Pike's toughest case yet, testing their loyalty to their clients and themselves in ways that have never been tested before. Following a career as a scriptwriter for classic shows like Hill Street Blues, Cagney and Lacey, Quincy, and Miami Vice, Crace published his debut novel, The Monkey's Raincoat. Came out in 1985. His novels have been categorized as mysteries and thrillers, but critics also describe the work as a unique form of modern literature that utilizes the classic portrayal of private investigators as seen in the works of Raymond Chandler. Robert Crace is the number one New York Times bestselling author of 24 novels, 20 of them featuring Pike and Cole. Crace was named a Grand Master by the Mystery Writers of America, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Robert Crace to this week's book show. How are you?
I'm great, Joe. It's terrific to be back. Thank you so much.
It's really nice to have you back on the program. How many years have you been doing this?
The first Elvis Cole novel, The Monkey's Raincoat, was published in 1987. So what is that, 6, 7 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And at what point did you start to realize that there was this Elvis Cole and Joe Pike connection where these two men could be the stars of a novel?
Well, when I wrote the first book, I never anticipated there would be 20 books, certainly. And I certainly never even dared dream that the books would become as successful as they have. But I always believed in the characters. You know, when I wrote the first book, Monkey, I created Elvis and Joe. And I just thought they had enormous potential because I love them. I mean, I found them fascinating and interesting. And I knew there were layers and depths and backstories to each of them that I could explore, certainly over the course of several books. But it's turned out that the deeper into them I dig, the more I find. And since I'm still entertained by them and I'm still fascinated by them, the number of books potentially that I could write just seems endless. I'll keep writing books till somebody pulls my plug.
Correct me if I'm wrong in this, but there was a time where it was an Elvis Cole novel or a Pike novel, and now it's both, right?
It began as both. And over the course of writing the first 3 or 4 books, I began to really want to uncover more of Joe Pike for the reader, for me too, but also for the reader. You know, the first, I think, 5 or 6 novels were written in the classic, you know, Chandlerian private eye format. Everything was Elvis Cole's first person point of view. You know, Joe doesn't talk very much, so I couldn't write a book from his first person point of view, but I very much wanted to get his backstory out. I wanted to give more of him to my readers. And so I broke that format with, I believe it was my 8th novel, L.A. Requiem, where suddenly I just broadened the canvas. I did Elvis Cole's first-person scenes. I did Joe Pike. I wrote him in third person. I did scenes from him, multi-character, multi-viewpoint, multi-storylines. And I've been doing it that way ever since. I like to say, you know, if I were a painter, it would be like adding colors to my palette. I think it's certainly more fun for me to do it this way, but I think it also makes for a much richer reading experience.
Well, it certainly does. It's really fun, and because you know where you're headed. You know, when you see Joe Pike at the top of the page, you say, okay, this is going to be this perspective versus Elvis Cole. And it is a very different perspective, and it's fascinating at how the two overlap.
Like I said, it's fun for me to write it that way. just to make sure people understand, I label the different sections, right?
Yeah,
The Elvis thing, it says Elvis Cole. Joe Pike scene, it says Joe Pike.
Yeah, you don't keep it a secret.
I don't keep it a secret, but I think you don't need that. If you read a paragraph from either character's point of view, you'd know immediately whose head you were in for that part of the story.
So for this story, The Big Empty, this is about a woman, a social media influencer slash baker, who is looking for a parent who is presumed dead, and it's coming up on a decade that the parent has been dead or missing, and this person who now has some means wants to know more about their father, which I think is universal, right? I mean, that's something that many, many people go through, of wanting to know more about their own backstory.
Well, private investigators uncover secrets. So I think about secrets a lot. And it seems to me that the most terrifying secrets really don't have anything to do with, what the Kremlin is up to, or the nuclear codes or any of that. The most terrifying secrets are the secrets kept by the people we love, because those are the secrets that can break your heart.
So in this case, it's going to Elvis and saying, I want to find out more. But there's a lot of protection around this person, because she's also kind of the cash cow.
Tracy Beller is this young woman. She's 23 years old when we meet her, and she's everything you just described. She's a social media influencer with enormous popularity, 8.2 million followers. But she isn't a social media sensation because she looks like a movie star, and we see pictures of her flying around in private jets and slipping out of Ferraris. She's a star because she has a likable girl next door. You meet her, you want to be her best friend, friendly quality that people are enamored with the moment they lay eyes on her. And what she's created or done to be so famous is she bakes muffins. Her dad taught her to bake muffins for, when she was 4 or 5 years old, and they would bake together. That's simply what they did. And when she was 13, her dad went to work one day. He was a heating and air conditioning guy. He went to work and never came home. So her mom, called the police. She worried, did he have an accident or whatnot? And the police got involved, and missing persons unit got involved, and they looked for him and investigated. But they came back to mom and they said, we can't find anything. He's just vanished. And we have to tell you, honestly, when a family man like this simply vanishes, almost always it's what we call a voluntary absence. And that's the kind way of saying the guy just split. Didn't say goodbye, didn't leave a note, just took off and ran. Well, 5 years later, mom wanted to have him declared dead. To do that, she hired some first-rate private investigators, and they went over the old case, and they did a much more thorough and in-depth job than the original police did. But at the end of the day there, they came back to mom and said exactly the same thing. We turned up every stone. We looked as hard as we could, but he just vanished. And once more, we hate to tell you this, but we think it's a voluntary absence. Well, that was good enough for mom, but it was never good enough for Tracy. So now, 10 years after he disappeared, Tracy has money. She has the means to hire her own private investigator. And that's what she does. She goes to Elvis Cole and she gives him the story. And she says, help me. Tracy's not an idiot. She thinks, she certainly doesn't believe dad ran away. He was the world's most wonderful dad. She adored him. And she thinks something terrible must have happened to him. If he could have come home, he would have come home. And she lays all this out to Elvis, and Elvis gets involved in the case. And then he begins uncovering secrets and running up against people who don't want him looking around. And of course, that only makes a guy like Elvis Cole dig even deeper.
The name of the book is The Big Empty by Robert Crace. It is published by Putnam. You don't beat us over the head with this, but I thought it was a sly way of telling us a little bit about internet culture, where now Elvis doesn't know who Tracy is, but people in his orbit do. He reports that to Tracy. And then at one point where something really horrible happens and Tracy finds out this information, all of a sudden picks up her phone, takes a selfie, sends it to Elvis and says, "This is for your friend who likes me, who's a fan." And that's sort of that business, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is. And I thought it was appropriate for the character in the novel. Everyone's plugged in online these days. Everyone, whether they participate in it or not, people are on Facebook, people are on X, people are on Instagram, all these other platforms. It's part of our daily lives now. So it just seemed natural that Tracy Beller would be a product of that. And she's so, in a way, innocent. Maybe that's not the right word, but she's such a normal person that I found her very appealing to deal with. As opposed, you know, so much of the internet, what we see celebrities, we see lunatics and people who are living out on the fringe. You know, Tracy isn't one of these people. Tracy's literally is the girl next door who made herself famous, not trying to make herself famous. You know, she started posting videos of herself baking probably when she was 14 or 15 years old. She only did it for fun. She never anticipated that she would be an internet superstar, but she became that. So it populates the world. And like Elvis Cole is much like me. When he first meets Tracy, he has no idea who the baker next door is, never heard of her. But so many people in his life have, you know, his girlfriend has, Lucy Chenier, and Lucy has a high school age son. He's a huge fan of Tracy. All his classmates are fans of Tracy. They follow her online. I found that great fun to write and portray in the book. And it's also fun watching Elvis Cole's reaction to it, because as far as Elvis is concerned, he thinks it's kind of all nonsense. But you know, he likes Tracy.
Well, that's the thing is that he reacts to Tracy differently, while some treat her as I use the term cash cow, because there's people there who are there because of what she provides for them and the business aspect of it, where Elvis is one of the people who is most interested in her.
It also gives rise to a lot of suspects. Yes. You know, you're absolutely right. Tracy, once upon a time, was a teenage girl making videos of herself with her cell phone just for fun. But now she's so successful. She has a production company. She has business managers. She has cookbook contracts. She's opening up brick and mortar stores to sell muffins that she creates. And she does guest spots on the Today Show. She's become a major enterprise. And we're talking about so much money that all these people she surrounded herself with, people who work for her, actually, they want to keep the cash flowing. So in a crime novel like this, they're all suspect. Everybody in the book is a suspect until they're eliminated. It helps me keep the tension up.
Sure. So you have Elvis, who has this pretty good open relationship, in the sense of open dialogue relationship with Tracy, as well as some of the other primary characters. And then there is Joe Pike, who comes in and really is playing that role of protector to Elvis, and to make sure that, well, first of all, somebody has his back, and second is kind of watching from the outside in as to what's happening and what's unfolding.
Joe and Elvis are partners in the agency. They were friends before there was ever an Elvis Gold Detective Agency. Joe was an ex-policeman. He was an ex-Marine. And for a time, he worked as a private military contractor, a mercenary. He's a tough guy. Their friendship is based on trust and mutual admiration, and they are truly best friends and have been for a long time. And because of the nature of the story, when if Elvis Cole needs someone to guard his back, Joe Pike's the guy for that, and there's no one better equipped for it.
When you have a character, and you mentioned this before, but I just would like to explore it a little bit more. When you talked about, you know, finding out more about Joe Pike and writing from that viewpoint. So in an individual novel, a novel like this one, because it's such a quiet character and yet who has such power and fury, how have you figured out to make him a presence, and so he's always a presence and is never lost?
I think I stay true to Joe's nature. You know, none of the characters in the book are there simply to serve some sort of literary purpose.
Right.
The characters are there because they're part of Elvis Cole's life. In the case of Joe, it's difficult for me to imagine Elvis Cole without Joe Pike. Ditto, it's difficult for me to imagine Joe without Elvis. You know, their team couldn't be more different, but that's part of the attraction. You know, Elvis is verbal, he's funny, he's outgoing. Joe's very internalized. And through the course of the 20 books, you know, I explore the reasons why these two men are the way they are. In fact, I think perhaps the single biggest reason that the books have gotten as popular as they have is their friendship. Throughout all 20 books, their friendship, their loyalty toward each other, has been an ongoing factor. And I think it's so pure that people who read the books want that in their lives too. You know, you want someone like Joe Pike in your life, meaning not necessarily a tough guy like Joe, but someone you can trust, that best friend who always has your back, that best friend you can go to with anything, and he or she won't judge you. It's a rare and good thing, and I think it strikes a chord with my readers.
I love it because it's a very much a two-way street. They have great chemistry with each other. They also have great respect for one another, and the trust is just unbelievable. There are moments in this novel where Elvis, for example, just knows that Joe is somewhere in the shadows watching and making sure that the situation is being monitored.
Yeah, it's sort of like having an invisible big brother.
Right.
That's all part of the fun, too, because sometimes, you know, readers will wonder, well, is Joe nearby watching? You know, is Joe going to keep Elvis safe? But invariably, Joe shows up when he's needed. Sometimes, not always, but eventually Joe gets there. And Joe is a force to be reckoned with.
I'll try for this question, and I say try because I think I'm gonna I may fumble it, but
no spoilers.
No. Good Lord, no, no. I'm just in my own use of language. I find that in this relationship and why this works and is so beautiful is because there are these moments you get to spend with each character. As I said, they trust each other implicitly, and yet they do not ever seem overly surprised by the amount of violence that they are encountering at every given point. And I just, that fascinates me of the type that you can have two different type of people, one who is very quiet, another person who's very demonstrative, and yet they both are able to have the calibration to be able to take that level of awfulness and violence that comes their way.
Well, there's an element of the books where the guys are action heroes,
Right.
right? I mean, from the first one, this I've always been a personal fan, and been drawn to, you know, buddy pictures. I just think it's enormously entertaining when you have, you know, a buddy picture scenario. You know, Butch and Sundance. You know, Batman Robin. You could go goes back forever. And that's why when I created the first these characters and wrote the first book, it was, you know, okay, I wanted to do a duo. I wanted a buddy movie happening, and that makes it all the more fun for me. And there's an element to this that is, you know, I don't think of my books as a specific singular type of read. You know, they are funny. There's drama. There are scenes that'll make you cry, but there's also the action element. I enjoy writing it, and so I've created guys who are capable of it, and that's Elvis and Joe. So they're after 20 novels, they're used to what each other can do, and they depend on what each other can do them to save them in a tight jam.
You talk about buddy pictures, but so I was no, tell me if I have this right, but I remember from one of our conversations, you wrote for Cagney and Lacey, among other shows. Is that correct?
I did. You know, rest my case. It was a buddy picture.
Well, that's right. Sort of where
two,
I was going.
Two,
like my
was a buddy picture. Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, and so that's the kind of thing, right? Is of these people who know each other better than they know themselves and work together to hopefully try to make the world a little bit better of a place.
Yeah. I mean, look, Cagney and Lacey, perfect example. Chris Cagney, Mary Beth Lacey, as people, completely different people. Yet they work together as police officers. They work together every day. They have to trust each other. They get in dangerous situations where one has to bail out the other. The other has to bail out the other. Oftentimes their lives depend upon each other. So over time, there's an enormous trust, respect, and friendship that builds up. Again, classic buddy picture scenario. I find it very satisfying, fun to take part in, and hopefully I bring that same type of element into the books.
Have you watched that show recently?
No, not in years.
It really holds up. It's solid.
Oh, good.
It really is very, very good. I binged it over the winter, and it's still a really, really good show. The writing was incredible, and the acting was amazing.
Well, it's hard to beat actresses like Sharon Gless, Tyne Daly. You know, they were both still are amazing, amazing actors, and I learned an enormous amount from them. When I worked there, my boss was April Smith, who was a woman and a fabulous writer. The writing staff was terrific. I learned from all of them. But for a young male writer, writing stories and dialogue and scenes for these two strong actresses, Tyne and Sharon, and then having to sit through script reads with them and take notes and work, was an education you just cannot buy. I think I learned an enormous amount about writing women.
Mm-hmm.
That there was simply, had I not worked on that show, that I don't believe, you know, I don't know where else I would have learned it.
Right.
But I worked on that show and learned an enormous amount. Just like I think of my entire TV career as my writing school. You know, I was a baby writer when I came to Hollywood and started writing television. And I did it for, I wrote television for about 10 or 12 years before I slowly transitioned to novels. But all, I was very fortunate. I worked on some terrific series like Cagney and Lacey, you know, Hill Street Blues, Quincy, Miami Vice, and others. And in most of the places I worked, the writing staffs, the people who were my bosses, were brilliant writers, and the education I got working on those shows, you know, characterization, editing, scene construction, etc. It was just incredible, and I think I don't know that I would have been as successful as I've been in the world of novels had I not had that education.
Correct me if I am wrong. I know one of your novels was made into a motion picture with Bruce Willis, but Hollywood has yet to get its hands on Elvis Cole and Joe Pike. Am I right on that?
You are correct, and it's because for all these years, my series books, which are the Cole and Pike books, I've resisted. I've said no. There have been scores of offers. I've always said no. I also, of course, as you pointed out, Hostage, which was a standalone book. I also write standalone books occasionally. And those I've been happy to sell the film rights to. But not Elvis and Joe. I've always felt very, very protective of the guys. Now I'm beginning maybe to loosen my hold. And that's only because, you know, it's been 20 books. And today, these days, you know, there's some wonderful things being done with television, film right. too. But I'm more interested in the television aspects now. When you see some of the material, like on Netflix or Amazon Prime, and other things that. Really doing interesting work with a, based off novels, and I'm starting to think, well, maybe it's time. I'm not sure yet, but maybe a lot of things are looking appealing, and we'll have to see how that plays out.
Robert Crace's newest novel is The Big Empty. It is published by Putnam. Thanks to our producer Sarah LeDuc. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at WAMC.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.